Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kean. Today we'll discuss the article by Zui et al. Titled, Impaired Cerebrovascular Autoregulation and Reduced CO2 Reactivity After Long Duration Space Flight. This article published online April 6th, 2012. My guests today are consulting editor John Longhurst, senior author Richard Hewson, and leading expert Ronnie Panerai. Let's get started.
Thank you very much, Kara. Spaceflight is something that is occurring much more frequently these days. It leads to reduced gravity, and the microgravity environment shifts fluid from the feet to the head, and over time is associated with increased pressure in the brain. This interesting article evaluated the alterations in cerebrovascular function in astronauts before and after long-duration spaceflight. Richard, can you please summarize the major findings of this article and review some of the techniques that you used in it?
Thanks very much, John. I think our major finding here is that long-duration spaceflight does affect the way in which brain blood flow is regulated. This contrasts a bit with some earlier data that was published off a 16-day, what they called the NeuroLab shuttle mission. And this is really the first time that these mechanisms have been looked at in detail after a long spaceflight. So the things that we saw are a decrease in what we call the autoregulatory index. This is a reflection of how the brain blood vessels respond to a change in blood pressure. We also saw a decrease in the response of the brain blood vessels to carbon dioxide. I think really this is one of the major findings out of this study because the CO2 or carbon dioxide reactivity of brain blood vessels is really an important reflection of the health of the brain blood vessels. In terms of the methods that are employed, what we do is we measure brain blood flow as an estimate. We use transcranial Doppler ultrasound. So we measured the brain blood flow velocity, and we did it while we manipulated the carbon dioxide content of the air the astronauts were breathing. We gave them two breaths of carbon dioxide, about 10%, about once per minute over a five-minute period. And from that, we were able to tease out the impact of blood pressure, because we're constantly monitoring the blood pressure from a finger cuff device that gives us continuous arterial blood pressure. And we constantly monitored the carbon dioxide content. And we teased those two things out by putting them into a model that allows us to see which one of those is affecting brain blood flow. And from that, we then looked at the pre and post flight values, and came to the conclusion that post-flight, the change in response to a blood pressure signal was a little bit reduced, and the change in response to carbon dioxide was also reduced. The real complex part of what happened here is that the studies were done in four different labs around the world, and we did some baseline testing for astronauts who were launching still then on the shuttle spaceflight. We did their baseline testing in Houston. And then we had to set up teams of investigators both on the West Coast in case they landed in the backup site of California or at the primary site at Kennedy Space Center and be ready for the astronauts as soon as they came off the shuttles. For a shuttle experiment, we got them within about 3 to 4 hours of their actually touching down on Earth, and we just simply rolled them straight into the lab. They'd never been up walking around before we got to them, and we did our experiments immediately after that. In terms of the astronauts launching and landing with the Soyuz, we actually went to Russia to do their pre-flight testing and Russia to do their post-flight testing. Things were a little bit different there. We couldn't get them immediately after landing because they land in the out in the steppes of Kazakhstan. They're flown back to Moscow. And so what we did was we went into their bedroom the next morning and carried them off to the lab so that they weren't upright walking around, and did our experiments fairly early on the morning after they landed.
Ronnie, can you tell us some of your thoughts about the strengths and limitations of this article?
It's an amazing study, given the logistic and technical difficulties in what is a notoriously difficult area of investigation. My main criticism or limitations I can see is that some of the results are borderline when it comes to statistics, and one can understand that given the reduced number of subjects. And I wonder to what extent some different technical approach in some of the choices that one makes in analysis. For example, the choice of order of the armor models could have influenced these results.
Yeah, thanks very much, Ronnie, for those comments. We really tried to come up with a method here that we thought would capture as much data as we could in as short a period of time as possible. And the model that we use, the ARMA model, the autoregressive moving average model, we really developed that with this two-breath test of carbon dioxide and published these data in the American Journal of Physiology back in 2004 when we manipulated the background of carbon dioxide. And it really proved to be a very sensitive method for testing and detecting differences in the autoregulatory response. So we felt pretty confident going in here that, you know, with spaceflight, you've got one shot and one shot only to collect your data. And you also have a very limited time frame in which you can collect it. So we were, you know, really counting on this method to produce the results that it did. In terms of your point about the borderline statistics, yes, for sure. Some of the values were pretty borderline. But I think the key one that I'm looking at here, we had that change in the response to carbon dioxide where the p-value is 0.017. And given the really small sample size that we're dealing with here, and there were really only 5 of the astronauts included in that part of the study, to get that level of significance on that small a number of subjects is really pretty good. This study was approved in 2001. We got our first astronaut in 2007 and our last astronaut in 2009. So it, you know, basically took 2 years of data collection to get 5 or 6 subjects.
Thank you very much, Richard. I noted that when you studied your subjects that they had been in space for variable numbers of days, ranging from 58 to 199 days, although most of them were more than 100 days. That seems that perhaps it could introduce some variability in the data. And secondly, that as you've already mentioned, that you studied them sometimes within a few hours, 3 to 4 hours after landing, sometimes 1 or 2 days after landing. And so I was wondering if these variables correlated in any way with the degree of changes in, for example, your cerebrovascular dynamic autoregulation, your responses to CO2, et cetera. Could you discuss that a little bit, please?
I guess the real point here is both in terms of duration that they were in space and the length of time after landing that we got them and did the study, we couldn't see any difference. There are really no major differences between the two landing groups. If the vessels did in fact hypertrophy while they were in space, if the walls got thicker, maybe the vessel luminal cross-sectional area got smaller, that took months to happen. And so testing them 1 day later after they've landed, that effect has not going to be gone by then.
It's well known that astronauts can lose plasma volume due to a diuresis that can occur in outer space. And I realize that various preventative measures have been used to counteract this. But I'm wondering if possibly any changes in circulating plasma volume may have contributed to any of your observations and potentially to any of the structural changes that you hypothesize might have occurred and resulted in your observations.
The plasma volume issue is something we've scratched our head about, really, because yes, when they're in space, more than likely their plasma volume is reduced. When they come back, they all took a fluid loading countermeasure. So a couple of hours before they land, they drink a saline solution that hopefully will increase their blood volume a little bit when they're back on Earth. In terms of their actual blood volume, though, we don't know what it was. We tried to get some information on this, but unfortunately it wasn't of much help. The one thing I can say, though, is that in our other paper that we just published, we had an indirect estimate of the cardiac output from the astronauts before and immediately after spaceflight. And their cardiac output was actually slightly elevated when they were back on Earth, even in an upright seated posture, which suggests that their blood volume was probably back up to about the pre-flight level, at least, if not even slightly above.
Well, thank you very much, Richard. Thank you very much, Ronnie. This has been a wonderful discussion. I have learned something, and that's always my goal. Kara?
And thanks for listening to this AJP Heart and Circ podcast.